Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Monday, February 17th. I'm Javier Rodriguez reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Humboldt Soups debate, new tax split for roads and transit. California Attorney General Bonta challenges Eureka's Providence St. Joseph over reproductive health care. And Eel Russian River Water Agreement moves forward. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up.
Thousands of protesters gathered in Washington, D.C. and in cities across the country today as part of the 50-51 movement. According to NPR, the movement began on Reddit with the slogan 50 protests, 50 states, one movement, in response to the Trump administration's efforts to slash government spending. Though the group has only been active since earlier this month, it has helped galvanize smaller protests nationwide. However, today marks its largest and most organized demonstration yet, with participants rallying under slogans like No King's Day and Not My President's Day. While major cities saw large demonstrations, smaller communities also joined in. Protests were reported in Eureka, Ukiah, and Fort Bragg, as well as in Garberville, where a small but determined group gathered under the town clock in drizzling rain.
I'm Mumser. I'm a resident of this area for over 40 years, and I'm very upset with the way the government is going these days. People losing jobs, health care, many things to be upset about. And I thought I could get out here with like-minded folks and at least make a statement. There's a nationwide protest today, so we thought we'd do it right here in town. We couldn't get to Sacramento or Eureka, and we're trying to do small local things. Life gives you lemons, we're going to make lemonade.
Another protester explained that despite living in this community for decades and protesting multiple presidencies, this demonstration, though small, felt different due to concerns for her personal safety.
Mumser called and said, do you want to go march? And that was about 2 weeks ago. And I said, yes. And then we got nervous about it because there was a lot of flack, which was very scary to us on Facebook, which was a bother. Just really negative reaction, which never had before on marches and or get, you know, things like this. You could express your feelings and not feel like, but it didn't feel safe. At this time with Trump's kind of way of presenting himself is people feel a little bit more like they can do things like that.
All attendees agreed that their next move is to focus on networking to strengthen and build community.
It's time to grow community. We are community, and the more that we are facing hardships, that you have to start right at the ground level, right where you are. And we are right here, and I think that we'll see these vigils, you're gonna watch it grow. I think the only thing that we can do is try to awaken our representatives at the local and then keep going, making lots of phone calls. And I just think that as things play out, as the future unfolds, we're gonna need each other more. So
we're trucking together.
Amen.
Sigurbjörn, reporting for KMUD.
The question of how shares of a new sales tax increase should be spent is dividing Humboldt County supervisors, Daniel Mintz reports.
Humboldt County's roads and public transit sales tax will generate $24 million a year in revenue, and the split between roads and transit spending is shaping up to be a divisive issue among county supervisors. A debate on it complicated a seemingly dry bureaucratic task at the February 11th Board of Supervisors meeting. Up for approval was formation of an ad hoc committee that will make a recommendation on how the sales tax revenue should be divvied up between roads and transit. The proposed makeup of the committee included Board Chair Michelle Bushnell and Supervisor Steve Madrone, who comprised the board's Measure O Roads Subcommittee. That was questioned by Supervisor Mike Wilson, who said the Roads Subcommittee was to be active only during Measure O's election phase. Beyond that, Wilson said he's, quote, a little bit nervous about how the significant Measure O revenue will be split, as support for roads and support for public transit varies depending on location.
Transit for our vulnerable populations pulled pretty darn well, but it actually pulled very well in I'll just put it in districts, in District 3 and in District 4. And I'm just saying, District 3 voted 70% to support this. I mean, it carried this. And so the perspective and the expectation may vary regionally. That's all I'm saying. I mean, just that's just a thing. Still, I got to go back to the first statement I made, which is, even if you didn't vote for it, you're paying for it. So we have an obligation to provide service to every single person in this. But I just want to make sure that we're understanding that the lens that we're looking through may vary.
With Supervisor Rex Bone saying county roads are, quote, terrible, and that's, quote, the majority of what we sold to voters, division became apparent. That prompted an acknowledgement from County Administrative Officer Alicia Hayes, who informed that Measure O funding will need a 4 out of 5 supervisors majority vote.
This conversation of the roads versus transit has been a sticky one for us through this whole process. Your board has been somewhat divided on where that split is going to fall. And so I think it's going to be, when it comes back to your board, it's going to be sensitive. And I want to remind you that a budget allocation does require a 4/5 vote. And so we're going to need to find that sweet spot, because it will be very easy for any of you to block it if we can't find comfort amongst 4 of you in what that split looks like. So maybe to offer a suggestion, you put on the committee 1 very pro-transit, 1 very pro-roads board member on there.
Measure O was approved with a 63% majority last November. The vote was countywide and will be charged in both unincorporated and city areas. Hence the board's division. Arcata is a big part of Wilson's district, and Eureka is a big part of Supervisor Natalie Arroyo's district. She said, quote, many, many people told her they were voting for Measure O due to bus transit needs, which include more service hours and days, and express service between Eureka, Arcata, and McKinleyville for workers, students, and seniors. Bone gave a nod to transit funding, but it's clear what he believes the priority should be.
We need roads to be fixed. Transit, if they need help, come in, show us. We're going to look at this annually. But I'm just saying, as we move forward, I don't want to be on that committee because there's going to be too many people and too many chefs screwing up the soup. I'm just saying, my 20% wants the roads fixed, and I want transit to be funded. That's a simple thing. I want transit to be funded, and transit is not short of funds. I mean, there's wish lists. We need to do this, this, and this. But as we move along, but our roads are failing, and they're going to do nothing but get worse if we don't do anything. Transit's not going to deteriorate in the next few years if we don't give them any money or don't give them their 10% or 15%, 20%, 25. Do I hear 30? Somebody give me 35. Anyway, I'm just saying that's not going to matter.
At Bushnell's suggestion, the board voted to replace her with Wilson on the Measure O funding committee. Bone cast a lone dissent vote. Other members of the committee are Madrone and representatives of County Public Works, the Humboldt Transit Authority, the Humboldt County Association of Governments, the McKinleyville Community Services District, the Coalition for Responsible Transportation Priorities, the County Administrative Office, the Building and Construction Trades Council of Humboldt and Del Norte Counties, and the Humboldt Builders Exchange. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Providence St. Joseph Hospital in Eureka is facing two lawsuits over allegations of denying emergency abortion care. The first, filed in October 2024 by California Attorney General Rob Bonta, claims the hospital violated California's Emergency Services Law, ESL, by refusing a medically necessary abortion to Anna Nuzluck, a woman experiencing life-threatening pregnancy complications. The hospital directed her to Mad River Hospital instead, allegedly causing serious medical complications due to the delay. While St. Joseph initially denied wrongdoing, it later agreed to comply with state emergency care laws moving forward. Now, the hospital has filed a request for dismissal, arguing that Bonta lacks authority to enforce the ESL and that religious freedom protections could justify its decision. Meanwhile, a second lawsuit was filed in December by an anonymous Humboldt County resident alleging three separate incidents where she was denied emergency pregnancy care and forced to seek treatment elsewhere, including driving over 5 hours to San Francisco. The new lawsuit seeks punitive damages and medical cost compensation. Both cases highlight growing concerns over access to reproductive health care in Humboldt County. On Friday, Humboldt County Superior Court Judge Timothy Canning heard arguments whether to allow California versus St. Joseph's to proceed. The courtroom was filled with supporters of the two women who were allegedly denied proper health care. Outside the courthouse, KMUD reporter Ryan Hudson spoke with the attorney for Anna Nuzluck, the local woman at the center of the potential landmark case.
Prosecutors from California's Attorney General's office appeared in Humboldt County Court Friday morning to offer an objection on Valentine's Day to Providence St. Joseph's request to dismiss the Attorney General's case, even after agreeing to a stipulated order last year which laid out the obligations of the hospital related to providing emergency abortion care despite the religious doctrine which dictates Providence's caretaking policies. A rally organized by Humboldt Abortion Access Advocates drew a large crowd on the morning of Valentine's Day in front of the county courthouse, where Anna Nuzluck was present to give an impassioned speech before she went into the court to observe the dismissal hearing in front of Judge Canning. We were able to catch up with Anna Nuzluck for a brief interview before she entered the courtroom alongside prosecutors from Attorney General Rob Bonta's office.
So last year, I had a horrible miscarriage. I was pregnant with twins who I was very, very excited to be pregnant with, and I lost them in a very scary and bloody way. And I went to Providence for help, and they turned me away. They gave me a bucket and showed me the door because they refused to help me because my daughter still had heart tones. And they put my life in so much danger for their religious doctrine. And now on the other side, I was able to get the help I needed at Mad River, but women can't do that anymore. And our only option here in Humboldt County is Providence for help. And so now we're fighting. And we're fighting to ensure that Providence will provide emergency care to people without discrimination, and that includes abortion, because abortion is healthcare. UCSF, which is a very, very good hospital,
right,
was consulted, and they said that was the only option. My doctor agreed that was the only option. My doctor wanted to provide that care for me, and the hospital refused to let them. The hospital tied my doctor's hands behind their back, metaphorically, and made me suffer for their religious principles, the hospital's religious principles, not my doctor's and not mine. My doctor told me that if I tried to drive to the city, I would hemorrhage and I would die in the 5 hours it took to get there.
Yeah, we are in a rural community and this is our only option, so.
We're here today, we're standing up for all the women in our community, and I think together we can do this.
Last fall, St. Joseph Hospital in Eureka agreed to a stipulated order, a settlement of sorts, in response to the Attorney General's filing of a preliminary injunction against the hospital, essentially demanding through the authority of the court that St. Joseph comply with California's laws related to emergency health care services. The Catholic Hospital, one of many owned by Providence in California and Oregon, has since reneged on that court-ordered agreement and filed a motion to have the case dismissed instead, claiming to answer to a higher authority in court documents. We spoke with Nussloch's attorney to see what could be expected from this dismissal hearing.
My name is K.M. Bell. I am the attorney for Anna Nussloch. She came to us through her involvement with the Attorney General's case. And today we are here to attend the hearing where St. Joseph Hospital Eureka is attempting to dismiss the Attorney General's case against them for violating the California Emergency Services Law, as well as the UNRUH Act by discriminating against her in their failure to provide her emergency care. This will be the hearing that the judge will consider the arguments today in determining his ruling on the hospital's motion to dismiss. But of course, we are optimistic that the court will follow the law and hold the hospital to account for its failure to provide this life-saving emergency abortion care. The Attorney General filed for what's called a preliminary injunction, which is basically a court order that governs while the case is being litigated. That hearing never took place because the hospital said we will go ahead and agree that we'll comply with the emergency services law and that we will allow our physicians to provide abortion services in medical emergencies. What's happening now is essentially an attempt to go back on that promise and say that the hospital, whenever it decides that providing abortion services would interfere with its religious doctrine, that it doesn't have to follow the law. You know, it's been really tremendous to see the incredible amount of community support. 70 people coming through here on a cold and drizzly day in this community to really come out in support of Anna has just been very moving.
Both Bell and Nussloch felt positive and expressed confidence in the state's case against St. Joseph Health. In their request, St. Joseph asserted that, in part, the Attorney General could not prohibit a Catholic hospital from applying faith-based policies on a case-by-case basis.
I'm excited to see what the Attorney General is going to do. I truly do trust the state and that the state is going to hold Providence accountable, and Providence will be providing care for women after we're all done with this.
A written ruling is expected from the court within 90 days regarding the dismissal request from St. Joe's.
As I said, you know, really appreciate the support of the community that we've seen here today. And look forward to hopefully holding the hospital accountable and ensuring that they provide emergency care in compliance with the law moving forward.
Reporting for KMUD News in Eureka, this is Ryan Hudson at Humboldt Freelance Reporting.
Turning to Mendocino, the Eel-Russian River water agreement moves forward, Elise Cox reports.
PG&E's announcement in 2019 that it would decommission the Potter Valley project led to years of uncertainty. Stakeholders in the Eel River and the Russian River Basin struggled to agree on a common vision for what would happen after the dams were removed. A new memorandum of understanding announced this week between the Mendocino County Inland Water and Power Commission, Humboldt County, Sonoma County, the Sonoma County Water Authority, CalTrout, Trout Unlimited, the Round Valley Indian Tribes, and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife represents a big step forward. Janet Pauley, chair of the Mendocino County Inland Water and Power Commission, says the diversion facility described in the MOU is a compromise to meet needs and address concerns of the many stakeholders. Pauly recalls that PG&E's intent was to remove the entire project.
They didn't want to have any liability for any part of it that would be left in the Eel River. And that meant removing Scott Dam and Cape Horn Dam, Van Arsdale Reservoir, Fish Ladder, et cetera, all of the project. The people on the Russian River side who become dependent on this water supply approached PG&E because, and PG&E knew that there was a dependency that had built over all these years, and started to negotiate with PG&E regarding the potential for building a new diversion facility that would not impact migration of listed species of fish. And so we've been working with PG&E. We've hired consultants to look at engineering a project. The project is currently called NERF, the New Eel Russian Facility, NERF. And at the same time, we've been working with our partners on the Eel River side to make sure that the new facility is not going to continue to impact the habitat on the Eel River. We've come to a place now where we have a facility at a 30% design. We still have a lot more work to do on that. Fisheries agencies and hydrologists, others that work on these projects, NGOs, have agreed appears to be something that would work well for a continued diversion.
Under the MOU, the Round Valley Indian Tribes will coordinate resources and partner with environmental groups to oversee restoration efforts. The agreement provides for lease payments to the Round Valley Indian Tribes for water usage, as well as funding for the environmental restoration efforts on the Eel River. The money is going to come from a new joint powers authority, the Eel Russian Project Authority.
It's a joint powers authority. The board is made up of two representatives from the Mendocino County Inland Water and Power Commission, one representative from Sonoma Water, one from the County of Sonoma, and then the Round Valley Tribe has a seat on that entity. We call it IRPA, and so you'll hear people talk about IRPA. IRPA is the entity that is going to ultimately own and operate and sell water from this project. It will be the funding source for ongoing operations. Okay. And it will also be making the lease payment to the Round Valley Tribe for use of their water under their water right.
Earlier this month, PG&E released their final draft surrender and decommissioning plan. PG&E needs to submit this to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, otherwise known as FERC. The diversion facility is included in the plan. The public has until March 3rd to comment on the plan.
The way PG&E is engaged with this is that PG&E is pleased that entities that represent stakeholders on both the Eel and the Russian have been working together to try and come to an agreement on how the diversion will function moving into the future.
For KZYX News, I'm Elise Cox. For all our local stories with photos and more, visit kzyx.org. You can get the KZYX News podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
In state news, Berkeley discusses plan to create public utilities to replace investor-owned utilities like for-profit PG&E. Teresa Wersbianska reports.
The goal is to create a fair plan for launching Golden State Energy, a statewide nonprofit utility to replace investor-owned companies like PG&E. Travis Shabrial is a Berkeley resident who urged the City Council to consider the resolution.
Yeah, the investor-owned utility model is structured such that whenever PG&E builds anything, we have to pay for their profits, right? A not-for-profit utility would take that out.
PG&E customers have seen sharp rate hikes lately. The utility recently reported a 10% increase in profit from 2023 to 2024, reaching almost $2.5 billion. That's attributed to six separate rate hikes approved by the California Public Utilities Commission last year, which resulted in a 20% increase in customer bills. The utility's earnings have surged over the past 2 years, with profits rising 25% in 2023. Those gains also come as PG&E disclosed spending almost $4 million on lobbying and public influence efforts in 2024. Lee Trotman from TURN, the Utility Reform Network, says PG&E lobbying hits customers right in the bill.
One of the things that TURN is really interested in is we need to really stop this lobbying, because without stopping the lobbying, you're just going to see unlimited rate hikes from PG&E.
Colin Cook-Miller is an organizer with the utility justice group Reclaim Our Power.
PG&E is not just a bad apple. It's actually the investor-owned utility model is not working and has not been working, that a better energy system is possible with a not-for-profit utility model. One that is safe, reliable, affordable, resilient, and just.
Cook-Miller says a nonprofit for PG&E's California territory would give advocates a chance to push for regulatory changes that rebuild public trust and put people over profits. The next step is to find a model that works, and that's what this resolution in Berkeley will do.
And so what this is calling for is to conduct a feasibility study that would compare the benefits, advantages and disadvantages of different not-for-profit utility models.
The Berkeley resolution was co-authored by Councilmember Igor Tregub and Councilmember Cecilia Luna Parra. San Francisco and Richmond have also passed similar resolutions. For KPFA Pacifica Radio, I'm Teresa Wersbianska.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer and thanks to our reporters. KMUD News is online. You can find us at KMUD.org, SoundCloud, Instagram, and Facebook. That is where you can see these stories, links, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@KMUD.org. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Javier Rodriguez.